You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Well, tonight's the night. I am ready to roll. I'm wired. In fact, I feel 6 feet tall. Hey, what say we take this thing for a joyride? Nope. Santa said stay away from his souped-up sleigh. Come on, just walks around the Milky Way. Get in. Oh, no. What happened?
Help!
Help! Now you've done it. You blew a head gasket and 6 hours to take off. You better do something fast.
I got it. That guy in Arizona, Perfection Auto Works. He came to our rescue before. Well, call him, you dumbbell.
Hello? What? Again?
How'd you get her so quick?
Santa gifted me a retro rocket in case of emergencies. Now, stand clear. There, all set now. You guys keep away from this machine.
Whoa, dude. Here comes Santa.
All right, let's go. The whole world is waiting. Ho, 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 ho. Wow, the sleigh never sounded better. Here we go. Let's make Christmas great again. Ho, 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 ho.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas from Perfection Auto Works. Bring in your sleigh and we'll have it running just like Santa's. Brakes, belts, tires, complete auto repair. 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
Now, two great furniture stores have become one. Homestyle Galleries, formerly located at 1010 South Wilmot and 2950 West Ina Road, have moved the Wilmot store to the West Ina Road location, making the Ina Road location one of the largest and most complete pre-owned and new quality furniture and home accessories store in Arizona. Homestyle Gallery saves you thousands of dollars on Southern Arizona's finest home furnishings. Now you can turn once-loved furnishings into cash. Visit this new Homestyle Gallery store at 2950 West Ina Road. They're open 7 days a week. There's never been a home furnishings inventory like this 15,000 square feet superstore. You must visit Homestyle Gallery's one-stop location for Southern Arizona's largest savings on quality furniture.
To the John C. Scott Political Forum. John C. Scott is hosting one of the longest-running political talk shows in Arizona. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum on KVOI AM 1030, The Voice. And now, John C. Scott.
Thank you and good afternoon. Welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum, now in our 33rd year of continuous political talk in Southern Arizona. Great lineup of guests today. Ashi Agarwal is going to be with us with a project called the EDGE Project, something that you need to know about. We'll also be talking with Stephen Zunas, our Middle East expert. We'll talk about the Ukraine. And then we'll be talking with Larry Bodine of the Democrats of Greater Tucson as they celebrate the midterm victories. Welcome to the John C. Scott Show. Ashit Agarwal is an attorney who served in senior roles in the Department of Justice and Federal Trade Commission at the FTC. Agarwal served as an assistant director of the Office of Policy Planning, where he led initiatives to help consumers and examine barriers to the growth of re-commerce. And as she serves currently as an advisor to the American EDGE Project. Ashit, welcome to the show. Good to talk with you again. Thanks for being with us.
Likewise, and thank you for having me on again.
You know, I saw an American EDGE project commercial on MSNBC, so you've reached far beyond the John C. Scott Show to get the message out, haven't you?
Well, you know, really, all as you said, all Americans really need to understand the importance of technology to our economy and our national security.
Well, let's talk about the American EDGE Project, and you're reminding listeners what this project is all about, so explain it, if you will.
Sure. It's a nonprofit coalition designed to, you know, remind people about the importance of technology to our country. You know, tech gets a lot of grief these days, and quite frankly, sometimes deservedly so. But we need to keep in mind that, you know, the biggest tech companies in the world are American companies, and that's a good thing.
You know, the lame duck session is underway. Lots left on the congressional plate, no doubt about that. And should the Senate and House be focused on this antitrust legislation? Your answer would be, I would assume, no. But let's talk about why.
The answer would be hell no. Look, you know, antitrust and tech were just not important issues in the election. I can't think of a single candidate anywhere in the country who ran on a platform of, hey, we need to regulate tech more, we need to increase costs for consumers more. Arizona had, probably as contested an election as, as anybody in both, for governor and for Senate. People weren't talking about these issues. The voters want, their elected officials to focus on inflation, crime, immigration, health care, and those sorts of issues.
You know, I think, too, Americans, and especially Arizonans, and I've followed Arizona politics as a reporter and, of course, as an anchor person on television for 15 years, now this talk show for 33 years, I think they want to get back to, prosperity. They want to get back to jobs. They want to get back to an economy. They want the tourists to come to Arizona. They want to relieve the economic stress they've been under for a considerable period of time, not only after the COVID-19 tragedy that just has killed so many and threatened the lives of almost every American. They want to get back to building their lives again and their economy again. And big tech plays a huge role in that, does it not?
Well, it absolutely does. Tech helps keep prices low for consumers by offering things like, free shipping, free mapping services. There have been studies that if some of these bills were to pass, they would cost the U.S. economy something like between $300 and $500 billion. And that just comes from all of the value of the efficiencies and the integrated services that you can get, through a Google, a Facebook, an Amazon, whatever. And you don't actually have to use those services, but they provide that competitive pressure that keeps prices low for consumers and small businesses.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the antitrust legislation and how it would affect Arizona business in particular, please.
Well, tech contributes something like $30 billion and almost 200,000 jobs directly to Arizona's economy. It funds a lot of investment in small businesses. Something like 70% of Arizona small businesses increased their use of online tools during the pandemic so they could reach their customers and deliver products to them. So to make it harder for these larger companies to do business would have devastating effects up and down the economy.
Well, let's talk about the legislation, really, about large tech companies that would affect companies we all are very familiar with, and that would be Amazon, Google, Meta, others come to mind as well. Specifically, how are they affected by this legislation, were it to pass?
Sure. What the bills would do is they would make it harder for these companies to offer goods and services to consumers. So they would say, for example, Amazon, you couldn't preference an Amazon product or somebody who's selling through Amazon on your website. The problem with that is that would also prevent Amazon from offering free shipping, because free shipping is a benefit. It could say to a Google, hey, Google, we don't want you to enter new lines of business, so we don't want you to develop new cars or new products or to improve the services that you do offer. So it really is designed to hit those biggest tech companies. But I would say, and I would hope that all people would agree with this, we really should have equality before the law. If something is good policy, it should apply across the board to everybody.
Yeah, no, you and I have had this conversation before. I talked about how big tech saved the lives of literally tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, of people across the world during the COVID-19. We geared up in our particular country, as did the world, to fight with a virus that was killing millions daily. And without big tech, without the ability of these large drug companies to develop an antidote, a means by which to control this epidemic, this death toll would have been doubled and tripled, and you and I might not even be here. I think people need to understand how that plays a role in their lives and the lives of the people they love.
Well, and think about how people, were able to, keep gainful employment during the pandemic. It was through, Microsoft Teams and Google Meet, and even, post-pandemic, that's how lots of people choose to work these days, and it's great. And it really is kind of the value of tech that helps secure people's privacy. I'd like to say one other thing briefly. I heard that you're going to have somebody on your show talking about the situation in Ukraine later. Well, you know what? Big tech has been a huge partner with the U.S. government in that fight by keeping the Russians from spreading their disinformation online. So, tech again. The point I made earlier, having these biggest companies be American companies really is a benefit.
Ajay, to talk about what's different about this. The attempt to use the antitrust legislation is different from past attempts, or is it not?
It really is very different. You know, for the last 40 years, really since the early days of the Reagan administration, there has been a bipartisan consensus among Republicans, Democrats, across the, you know, from Obama and Clinton up through Trump, that antitrust law is about protecting consumers, not about picking winners and losers in the marketplace. And unfortunately, with some new progressive impulses, what these bills would do would, you know, pick winners and losers, and it would empower the government to promote special interests. That's really not what antitrust law has been about for, again, the last 40 years.
We are, and as I mentioned in the very beginning of this interview, the lame duck session of Congress. Where are we as far as running out the clock and avoiding this attack on big tech?
Well, I'm feeling reasonably optimistic. I think more and more senators and members of Congress recognize that these issues aren't priorities for the American people. You know, there's certainly other fish to fry in terms of the budget reauthorization and, you know, tackling immigration and all these other things. So we feel pretty good about it, but, you know, the issues aren't going away, and we just want people to understand how important technology is to the economy.
There is not, and I would suggest that you would agree with this as well, a war of big tech against small business. How does big tech affect and benefit the small businesses that make up the vast majority of our economy in America?
Well, and what they do is they allow small businesses to reach consumers, you know, across the country. So if you are, you know, a restaurant in Tucson, it's great to advertise on radio, which is incredibly important, and your newspapers and your local TV. But, you know, the ability to advertise, you know, online allows you to reach, you know, truly a national audience. And if you're a retailer, you know, you can be a Tucson retailer and be able to ship a product at your relatively low cost to somebody in New England. And before technology, before the growth of these companies, it was much more expensive to do that.
Again, play the role of the American Edge Project in this battle, if you will. Explain where you are now in this fight.
Well, so, you know, we're regularly trying to persuade members of the public and members of Congress. American Edge Project, we're on every place from MSNBC to Fox News. Telling the story of tech. And we've really made an impact, too, because we've, you know, persuaded, I think, you know, members of Congress who, you know, again, might have some very legitimate concerns with tech. And I wouldn't defend everything that's happened over the past 2 years, but who might have those concerns to recognize, hey, they're real national security implications here, in terms of cybersecurity, China, and there's real impact on, you know, businesses like in Arizona.
So what is the international approach to big tech beyond the borders of the United States, if you will?
Well, that's another thing we need to keep in mind, which is that the rest of the world, starting with Europe, but also parts of Asia, Australia, really have put a target on U.S. tech companies, and, you know, in an effort to, you know, protect their home industries, to, you know, quite frankly, transfer wealth from U.S. stockholders to, you know, to Europeans and Australians, these other governments are really looking to crack down on big tech. You might read, you know, every week or two, you'll read a story about how the European Union has imposed, you know, X billions of dollars in fines on U.S. tech companies for really just competing, you know, vigorously and trying to offer, you know, goods and services to European customers. So when Congress looks to do the same thing, it makes it much more difficult to defend U.S. economic interests abroad. And that only hurts our shareholders and our workers.
Ajit Agrawal is a current advisor to the American Edge Project. Ajit, let me just take a quick break and I'll come back. I have more questions about the Edge Project and what is in store beyond this lame duck session of Congress. So stay with me, please. Thank you. We'll return to the John C. Scott Talk Show from the Perfection Auto Works Studios after these messages.
What organizations sponsor the news you see on TV? Do you think these sponsorships affect the news reports about their products? Do these same organizations sponsor politicians? If you recognize that our current leaders represent their own interests far more than yours, if you question the political theater you're fed every day, and If you question the approved narrative, become engaged for freedom in the Pima County Libertarian Party, no matter your political party preference.
Check out PimaLP.org or find us on Facebook. Paid for by the Pima County Libertarian Party.
Together, they've brought a bit of France to the heart of Tucson. Guinea's French Cafe and La Baguette Bakery at Prince and Campbell have become a gathering place for Tucsonans who love great bread and wonderful food. The bread and the pastries of La Baguette Bakery have become a Tucson favorite, and Guinea's French Cafe offers casual atmosphere, delightful French cuisine, and moderate prices. Dine in or dine out, Guinea's is just perfect for breakfast and lunch, offering specialty coffees, lattes, French wines, cocktails, imported beer, and a touch of France. Guinea's French Cafe and La Baguette Bakery in the Safeway Center at Prince and Campbell have now become Tucson's destination to dine in or to take out.
Radio advertising busts through clutter and reaches your customers with immediacy.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
Tell a creative story with intimacy and emotion to sell your products and services directly to your customer.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
Your radio commercial puts you front and center in the listener's attention span.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
Ackerly Advertising has over 5 decades of radio advertising experience. Stir emotion, create demand, and grow your business with radio.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Ashin Agarwal is an attorney who served in senior roles at the Department of Justice and Federal Trade Commission. He is now an advisor to the American Edge Project. Ashin, explore with me one more time the relationship of big tech and national security, which I think people sometimes disregard, which is unfortunate.
Well, you know, most of the investment in new technologies comes from the private sector, not from the Pentagon. Something like, you know, 2/3 of the money comes from the private sector, and that funds research into artificial intelligence, quantum computing, advanced semiconductors. These are the tools that are going to determine who wins this sort of new competition that we have with China and other authoritarian regimes. So one of the points we make is, gosh, let's not cut the legs out from under our biggest technology companies who are making these investments, some of which pay off, some of which don't, in advanced technologies.
If you are successful in your defense of big tech against the lame duck Congress, which only has a few more weeks to, exist, what's next with the next Congress, do you believe?
Well, I think the next Congress, particularly with the Republican House, is going to look a lot more at the speech issues. And look, there's been a lot of criticism about the tech companies from the left on not moderating and removing enough content, from the right about removing too much content. I'm sure you saw with Elon Musk and the Twitter files coming out in the last day or two. So I think Congress is going to look very heavily at those issues and to see whether they need to do anything.
So big tech is looking at another year. What do you expect from these companies in relationship to the government in 2023?
Well, there's a very interesting bill in Congress that would make it illegal, that would ban government officials from using their authority to influence social media companies to take down content. I'm very curious to see if that bill gets some traction in the next Congress, because that would address a lot of the concerns that people have about the government kind of interfering with free speech. So I think that's the one thing. I think in terms of sort of the economic regulation, what I'm hopeful for is that there will be a recognition about the importance of tech to the country. I will give the Biden administration a lot of credit for cracking down on exports of advanced technologies to China, and also I think they get a lot of credit along with Republicans for making some new investments in U.S. technology infrastructure.
For those that have heard us and agree with you, I would like to support the American Edge Project. Tell us again how it exists and how people might help it exist further.
Sure. It's a nonprofit coalition of tech companies and other friends of tech. If you're interested, check out our website, AmericanEdgeProject.org. There's a lot of great content there.
By the way, we've gone through some, and I don't want to drag you into the political aspects of our show, although you're probably there, whether you like it or not. This has been a very difficult time for America, not only with the COVID-19 tragedy and then, of course, the politics that have been so heated. And what do you expect, and as it relates to your relationship with the Congress and Big Tech's relationship with the Congress in 2023? Are we moving into an era of more calm and less chaos, or are we still there? What do you think? I don't really expect you to answer, but answer if you will.
I'm really hoping for some more calm. Quite frankly, I think that there's a lot of benefit to divided government, and whatever your political affiliations are, I will say that it does seem like there's been just a very, very aggressive agenda being pushed over the last 2 years, and people can say the same thing about the time under President Trump. It would be great if Congress focuses on legislation that could get some bipartisan support, so nothing too, crazy or extreme, and just get back, as you said, to some normality and focusing on things and issues that actually matter to people. That would be wonderful.
I think that's what the American people want. I really do. Once again, people can find out more about the American Edge Project by doing what?
AmericanEdgeProject.org. Just check out our website.
All right. I thank you so much, Ashid, for being with us. It's good to talk with you again. I think it's an important issue people need to have on their minds and to be involved in. Thank you for being on our show today. I appreciate it.
Thank you again.
You bet. Ashid Agarwal, I'm an attorney who served in senior roles in the Department of Justice and Federal Trade Commission and at the FTC. He served as an assistant director of the Office of Policy Planning, where he led initiatives to help consumers examine barriers to growth and commerce. Ashid currently serves, as we mentioned, as an advisor to the American Edge Project. We'll be back with Stephen Zunis of the University of San Francisco. We'll be talking about the Ukraine, talking about Israeli politics. That's coming up next. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum from the Perfection Auto Works Studios. Thanks for being with us on this Saturday.
Ho, ho, ho. Yeah, I got you. Nothing to laugh about here. Worst year ever. Canceled everything. I just found out they canceled Christmas. What's the point? It's the point of anything. Let's see what's on the tube.
We will make America strong again. And yes, together, we will make America great again.
Honey, round up the reindeer, get the elves. Christmas is a go this year.
Thanks, Santa, and I agree. Christmas is on. It's going to be the best ever. It's been a tough year, but it's going to end great. Get out those Christmas decorations, put up that tree, and get into the Christmas spirit, because the King is with us. Make this the best Christmas ever. 323-8650.
From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. With me is Dr. Stephen Zunis, Professor of Politics and International Studies at the University of San Francisco, where he serves as coordinator of the Program of Middle Eastern Studies, recognized as one of the country's leading scholars of U.S. Middle East policy and strategic nonviolent action. Dr. Zunis, thanks for being with us. Good to talk with you. You and I have had conversations for almost two decades, 20 years or more, and it seems like we've talked about Benjamin Netanyahu as the head of the Israeli government through all this period of time. But I have to ask you, how in the name of God can one of the most corrupt politicians on the face of this earth continue to lead the Israeli people? Is he all they got? They got nothing else? Really?
Really, it is disappointing. I mean, Israel, to its credit, is a democracy. It has a very incredibly diverse array of political views and very talented people. But oh my God, you're right. This is Netanyahu is really really bad news. He's extremely right wing and racist and militaristic and everything like that. But he's also just incredibly corrupt. I mean, there are a whole slew of indictments against him. All sorts of corrupt practices and bribery and extortion and all this kind of thing. And yet it appears that he is indeed going to be prime minister yet again, the longest serving prime minister in Israeli history. And indeed, one reason he's so desperate to be prime minister is to avoid going to jail. Because there's, I mean, otherwise that was where he would be. And so he's so eager to stay out of jail, he's willing to make these bargains with these extreme right-wing groups. I mean, these racists who want to expel all the Palestinians and have supported these far-right, I can only call them terrorist groups, that have killed countless Palestinian civilians and destroyed their orchards and vineyards, and he's just cheering them on. These kinds of people that he's bringing in together to hold on to power. And it is really a shock, especially those of us, you know, who at least some years ago, I mean, there's always been some questions about Israeli policy as far as the Palestinians and everything, but at least, yeah, it was a relatively progressive democratic society, at least for its Jewish citizens. But now, oh my, this is indeed really, really disturbing.
You know, I've always said to you that I thought peace died with Rabin. I thought he was one of the few Israeli leaders that would lead to some kind of settlement between the Palestinians and Israel. Nothing really has come close to what I think he was trying to do. Is there anyone out there that would step forward in the near future or even far future that could bring this terrible situation to some kind of peaceful solution? Or is there no peaceful solution ever?
Yeah. I mean, there are certainly Israeli figures, including some political figures, who do have that kind of a vision for an equitable settlement, that a viable two-state solution for a Palestinian state alongside a secure Israel. But unfortunately, their political parties, you know, are getting collectively less than 20% of the vote now. It's the center right and far right and far, far right that tend to be dominating Israeli politics nowadays. And so it does really seem dubious. And this is what's led many people who for years talked about a two-state solution, saying, you know, it may be too late for that. Maybe we are going to have to talk about some kind of essentially an anti-apartheid kind of approach, you know, some kind of binational state or something, because the more these settlements go in the West Bank, I mean, they're turning the Palestinian populated areas into Swiss cheese. And then so, you know, the idea of a viable contiguous state is less and less possible. And of course, the more extremists come to dominate Israel, the more the extremists are rising up among the Palestinians. I mean, you're starting to once again, after, outside of Hamas, occasionally lobbing these rockets into civilian areas of Israel, the West Bank, had largely been quiet, but you're now seeing these cells that are operating outside the purview of the Palestinian Authority that are springing up, talking about resumption of armed struggle, and you've had these Israeli raids into areas in Palestinian areas, which ended up killing a lot of people, not just the militants, but a fair number of civilians as well. And things are getting more and more tense by the week.
Let's move to the Ukraine for a moment. I apologize for the brevity of time we have here. Russian forces struck the eastern and southern part of Ukraine earlier this week. These crews are scrambling to restore power, water, and heat. Snow and the frigid temperatures is literally threatening the lives of thousands, if not millions, of civilians. You've said that the Russians can't win this war. But what's going to be left of the Ukraine as it drags on with the destruction of these cities and the killing of so many civilians?
Well, I mean, the Russians have proved that they cannot really advance on the battlefield, so they're resorting more and more to these terror tactics. Let's remember, Ukraine is a cold place in the winter. We're talking like Minnesota, Dakotas type cold, right? And so when you destroy the electrical system and the power plants and things like that, people freeze. I mean, it's that simple. And this is a modern industrialized society. They're dependent on electricity and natural gas and the thing, we are here in the United States. And so when you have that cut off, you do have a human catastrophe. So you're having millions of displaced persons who are trying to to move further east out of the somewhat out of the range of these missiles. But these terror attacks are indeed going to have serious humanitarian consequences. In addition to the civilians who are killed outright by these attacks, we're going to have people who are going to die because of the lack of electricity and heat.
Well, when the power's out, it's often in high-rise apartments overlooking much of the Ukraine's war-torn capital. There's no lights, there's no water, no way to cook food. The risk is not being able to...
people having to go up 20 flights of steps. I mean,
escape the 21st floor with a Russian missile strike. Even when the electricity comes back on, it's never on for long. I don't think you and I or anyone can totally imagine how horrible that can be. What an existence that can be. Where's this going to end and when? Do you have any predictions or observations, Stephen?
I'm afraid it's going to drag on for a long time. The degree of fighting, has had a waxed and waned. I don't think in the conditions of winter that Ukrainian forces are going to be advancing, very fast. Though again, confident that the Russians cannot win, that I don't see an outright Ukrainian victory anytime soon either. It's just going to be a war of attrition, basically, where not only a lot of soldiers are going to die, but as we were noting, the civilians will be suffering too, as Russia seems to be paying less and less distinctions between the armed forces of Ukraine and the Ukrainian people.
Well, observers have said, the Russian strikes are just plunging the Ukraine back into the Stone Age, and you can see that from the rubble.
Yes, I mean, there have been a number of wars around the world where there have been high civilian casualties, some of them inflicted by the United States and its allies. But the consequences of war on a modern industrialized society, where people really are more dependent than a lot of places for a fuel and electricity, where the winter conditions are far more harsh. The consequences can be even worse.
We talked about what the Ukraine will pay in a price, the civilian death, destruction of its infrastructure and its cities. What price will Russia pay for this when it's all said and done?
Well, they're already paying a price, and that the economy is in a mess. You've had many of the best and brightest people, and especially among the younger generation, who've been fleeing the country, trying to escape not just military conscription, but even being part of an increasingly militarized and autocratic society. There's more and more restiveness among the ethnic minorities in Russia, who are disproportionately being sent to the front line and are disproportionately being hurt because of the economic problems. And we're seeing there's growing dissent in Russia. I mean, the best thing that could come out of this, of course, is that people will rise up and get rid of Putin, which I think they will eventually, but it's probably not any time in the near soon. And the damage that he's inflicting on the Ukrainians and ultimately on his own people is only going to continue for a while.
Do you see an increasing number of NATO countries once this is all said and done, or will there be blocks made by Turkey and others? Will NATO expand, is my question.
Well, it's already expanded with the addition of Finland and Sweden that were strictly neutral throughout the Cold War. There's a real possibility that Moldova may end up joining, and possibly a couple of the former Yugoslav republics that have not yet done so. I mean, many people, myself included, frankly, thought NATO was something of an anachronism after the end of the Cold War. But in certain ways, today's Russia, which seems to combine the worst of the Soviet era and the worst of the Tsarist era into one, is proving itself, to indeed be a threat. And there's a lot more openness among people who were reluctant to see in this modern era these growth of military alliances are starting to think that maybe they are indeed necessary when you're dealing with such a threat. So We'll see some expansion of NATO, to be sure, or I think in some cases more informal arrangements that not full-scale membership, perhaps, but certainly an assumption that they will not be left defenseless if they are indeed faced by aggression.
How much of a threat to Putin's leadership is there now, and do you think there will be in the coming year?
Well, I think there's a lot of rumbling. We talk a lot about the oligarchs and everything, and the sanctions placed on the oligarchs, which most people, myself included, think were good moves. But let's remember that these oligarchs are oligarchs because Putin allowed them to be so. I mean, these are not people who were rich and then decided to support Putin. These are people who got rich in part because they were in Putin's favor. I mean, pretty much all the wealthy people in Russia are corrupt as hell. But the thing is if they end up challenging Putin in any way, they're immediately indicted for corruption. Now, like I say, they're all corrupt, but essentially they lose their immunity if they end up challenging Putin, and so they pretty much have to follow along. I think it's his real core support is people from the old St. Petersburg group of KGB people that he originally was connected with in the old days who've been around him. But they're a relatively small group, and I think that and Russia is a very big society, and it's I can't imagine that given the harm that he's doing, both in terms of the all these young men whom are inadequately trained with inadequate equipment, who are dying on the front lines, but all the other people who are being denied opportunities as Russia is being increasingly isolated in the world. I can't imagine that they're not going to at some point rise up and organize and find allies in powerful places, and that Putin will indeed be pushed aside. I do not see that happening the coming year, but possibly, but it may be a little longer than that, but he is not going to die of old age in office. That I'm pretty confident about.
Stephen Sern, it's always great to talk with you. I appreciate all of the expertise. I'm always on the front row taking notes when you talk, and I'm much better off because of that. Hope you have a great holiday. We'll talk again. We've been talking for 20 years. Might as well just keep it up for another 20. What the heck, you know? Thanks.
I certainly enjoy that.
All right. Thank you, Stephen. Stephen Zunis of the University of San Francisco. Professor Zunis is one of the most respected observers of Middle East politics. We've had him as an expert on our show for literally 20 years, and we go back a long, long way. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum from the Perfection Auto Works Studios. We'll return with Larry Bodine of the Democrats of Greater Tucson, an update on what the Democrats are up to after the midterms following these messages. Now, two great furniture stores have become one. Homestyle Galleries, formerly located at 1010 South Wilmot and 2950 West Ina Road, have moved the Wilmot store to the West Ina Road location, making the Ina Road location one of the largest and most complete pre-owned and new quality furniture and home accessory store in Arizona. Homestyle Gallery saves you thousands of dollars on Southern Arizona's finest home furnishings. Now you can turn once-loved furnishings into cash. Visit this new Homestyle Gallery store at 2950 West Ina Road. They're open 7 days a week. There's never been a home furnishings inventory like this 15,000 square feet superstore. You must visit Homestyle Gallery's one-stop location for Southern Arizona's largest savings on quality furniture.
What organizations sponsor the news you see on TV? Do you think these sponsorships affect the news reports about their products? Do these same organizations sponsor politicians? If you recognize that our current leaders represent their own interests far more than yours, if you question the political theater you're fed every day, and if you question the approved narrative, become engaged for freedom in the Pima County Libertarian Party, no matter your political party preference.
Check out PimaLP.org or find us on Facebook. Paid for by the Pima County Libertarian Party.
from the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. The following is a presentation of the Democrats of Greater Tucson, who are responsible for the content of this broadcast segment. Here's Larry Boudin, president of the Democrats of Greater Tucson. Well, the year end is coming for the Democrats of Greater Tucson, following the rather enormous amount of success Democrats have enjoyed in the midterms of 2022. So what's on the agenda for a final gathering of the Democrats of Greater Tucson in 2022?
Hi, John. Thank you. Yes. Next Monday, December 5th, will be a closed meeting of Democrats of Greater Tucson. We are going to call in our 250 members and have them elect a new slate of officers. And as part of that, I will be no longer the president and instead will be the past president, because on Tuesday I got elected to be the chair of Legislative District 18, Democrats. And so I will be segueing from one Democratic organization to an even bigger one.
The Democrats of Greater Tucson, though, will resume their activities in 2023. So let's talk about the year in review and how enormous it was to see the success of Democrats in the midterms, which was never expected.
Well, I got to say, we since 2019, we've doubled our membership. It's by just providing really interesting speakers, educational speakers, and fun events. Since May last year, we've done 18 Drinking Democratically happy hours, which have just become completely popular. Everybody turns out for them, and it's a chance to meet together in person and share the camaraderie of being with other Democrats. We also expanded our programming. We did a bunch of evening salons that were focused on issues as opposed to candidates, and that went really well. And then we put up our website. We've got over 500 articles and events on it. We held a fundraiser in May where we brought in a guy called Frank Feluzzi. He's on MSNBC, and he was available, and I had him on a program in May, and we raised a lot of money that we're going to use to, well, we helped various parts of the Pima County Democratic Party and other parts. And so, you know, all in all, it's been a really successful year, and really the most important thing was I had a great time. I really enjoyed meeting all the people and opening the meetings and, you know, asking questions to speakers. It was just a wonderful experience for me.
You know, I think people should understand this if they're not involved in politics, that there's an opportunity, whether you're left or right, if you happen to be a progressive, a Democrat, the Democrats of Greater Tucson, as well as the Democratic Party, has a place for you. You can play a role. You can meet a lot of nice people who have similar thoughts that you have concerning politics. But I think you'll feel empowered to really change the world the way you'd like to see it change, or to preserve it the way you'd like to have it preserved. It's amazing how one person can make a difference. And we see these campaigns where there's just a few votes separating one from another. That certainly applies to the Arizona Attorney General's race. It applied when Ron Barber, the Democratic congressman, lost out a couple hundred thousand votes. By 168. Every vote counts, but you can play a role in the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, for that matter, as well.
Yeah.
If you just join up.
Yes. Join up, get active, stop yelling at the TV. That's a motto I've developed, and it's worked really well. And to the people who say, oh, I don't think my single vote will count, you know, look what happened, as you mentioned, with Kathy Hoffman, the superintendent of public instruction, and Kristen Engel. These people, you know, lost their races by a hair's breadth of just a few votes. Now, we're coming back in 2024 stronger than ever, of course, and we hope to correct that mistake and put a Democrat into both of those positions. But it's going to be just the same as this election. One vote could decide everything. Well, and that could be your vault.
Well, so, it can. I just want to say thank you again. We're going to discontinue. Well, you're not meeting for the until the end of the year, and then we'll begin our previews and our interviews concerning the Democrats of Greater Tucson in January of 2023. But you've done a marvelous job. The great success of the Democrats of Greater Tucson can be directly attributed to your efforts, and I congratulate you on that. And you're going to have a great time being the head of the Democratic Party in Legislative District 18. I wish you well for that, and I thank you for being on the show today. Thank you.
Absolutely, sir, and all the best to you.
Thank you. Well, we'll be back next week for the John C. Scott Political Forum. Mike Emery, thank you for your support from Perfection Auto Works. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks so much for listening.
Are you tired of yelling at the TV when news about politics comes on? I know I am. This is Larry Bodine, president of Democrats of Greater Tucson. It's time to activate yourself by joining us and helping to elect Democrats. Simply Google Democrats of Greater Tucson and click on Join Now. Don't just sit on the couch. Activate yourself today with Democrats of Greater Tucson.
Oh, Donner, easy blitzing. Slower, slower. Oh, reindeer poop.
Perfection Auto Works. Santa, it's been a while.
It's about to sleigh, Mike.
Time for those iridium reindeer plugs we talked about?
No, minor front end damage. The reindeer brakes just wouldn't hold.
Okay, hang on. Hello, Merles? Full brake set for a... Hang on a minute. Santa, what year is that sleigh? Okay. Merles, listen. Full brake set for a 37 sleigh. No, including the rotors. A full set. Okay. Santa, major tune-up as long as you're going to be here?
Why not? Talk to me about that Jado bottle again.
Perfection Auto Works, from the hood to the trunk latch, from sleigh brakes to motor mounts. PerfectionAutoWorks.com or 323-8650. That's 323-8650.